From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. What is it about soup? It's always been with us. Whether you need warmth or kitchen love or a little healing and heartiness on a cold day, sometimes nothing feels quite as right as a bowl and a spoon and everything in it. Soup keeps us going. Right now, bone broth is all the rage. Ramen and other Asian noodle soups are filling bellies from coast to coast, and the classics are getting great updates. This hour on Point, this cold winter, the bone broth craze and great soups. Joining me right now in the studio, a studio filled with incredible aromas from the soups and broth they've brought today, are two great cooks to remind us of why soup is so dear to us and how to make it great. Bridget Lancaster is executive food editor at America's Test Kitchen, Cook's Illustrated Television Show, which airs on PBS. She's also lead instructor for the America's Test Kitchen Cooking School, the Test Kitchen's newest cookbook, The Healthy Slow Cooker Revolution. Bridget Lancaster, thanks so much for being here.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
In our soup heaven right here. Also with us is Ming Tsai, chef and owner of Blue Ginger and Blue Dragon, two well-known, well-regarded East-West fusion restaurants in the Boston area. He's also host and executive producer of the Emmy-nominated public television show Simply Ming. His most recent book is also called Simply Ming. Ming Tsai, welcome to you. Great to have you right here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Listeners, we have recipes for all the soups you're going to hear about today on our website, onpointradio.org. We have to go straight to broth because I was not tuned into this, but I have producers who are just crazy about this broth craze. Bridget, what is going on? There's stock, there's consomme, there's broth, and broth is just raging hot right now. Paleo people say it's the healthiest thing ever. It's going to fill us with collagen and minerals,
right.
and I don't know what all that's going to make us happy and healthy. What's going on with broth?
Well, I think there's something to that where it makes us feel happy and healthy because our grandmothers always forced chicken noodle soup down our throats when we got sick. And boy, did we feel better after
that. Is that a broth?
Of course that is.
What's a stock? What's a broth? When people say broth is hot, what are they talking about? What's it mean exactly?
Well, the two terms are pretty much used interchangeably, but there are some rules to what is and what isn't a stock or broth. Stocks are, by and large, mostly bones. It's often roasted. Sometimes some aromatics are thrown in there, too. And it's simmered for a very, very long time.
So bones and water.
Pretty much, yes. You might have some red wine in there and some other things to help to break down the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And a broth will contain more meat.
Okay.
Now, again, if you look up recipes here and there, you might find that a lot of these recipes are breaking those two rules. And then a consommé goes a little bit farther where it's just a very, very refined broth. So you want
very
little,
clear.
Very clear.
The French say you should be able to read a coin at the bottom
That's
of the
right.
bowl.
Yeah, it's all about clarification, no fat in it or as little fat as possible. And the flavors are very, very clean. So, you know, most home cooks do not have time or the patience to make a consommé.
Ming Tsai, what do you make of this broth craze right now? I mean, everything comes and goes. Asian soups, the broth is at the heart of so many. What do you make of what's going on in the U.S. right now?
You know, I think it's about time. We've been in Asia for thousands of years eating broth noodle soups. It's, as Bridget said it, it's what mom and grandma did give you. For us, it'd be a double chicken stock, as we called it. And it's such a great way to just make you literally feel warm inside and out. And the nutrition benefits, you know, hats off to our, I know we're going to speak to Marco Canora coming up with his new place, Brodo. He's really put it out there to the American public that not only is this a great, healthy way to really maintain health, it's also inexpensive. Anyone can make it themselves. And it's tasty. So this is not a diet. This is just something you should do, period.
But it's not something that everybody does every day, throwing oxtails and necks and all
right.
kinds of cartilage-heavy bones into a pot and simmering them. I'm reading here some people simmer them for days.
Yes.
I mean, here's a sign I brought for you, Tom. So one of the signs of a great broth, the more gelatin, the better.
This is cold.
So this is a pork broth.
It actually looks like brown jello.
Looks like jello. So that's the collagen. So that's what keeps a broth sticky, as we say in the restaurant. We want a sticky broth. And the more gelatin, the better it is for you, because that's part of why you're eating a broth.
I mean, the stock that I have in cartons from the store,
right.
there's no way it turns into gelatin
no.
when I put it in the fridge.
No.
It's just liquid.
That's
Correct.
Right. Well, that's mostly because they're using off cuts of meat and very little bone. You're going to get a lot of that gelatin or collagen from knuckle joints
yep.
And from marrow bones and things like that.
And if you're doing chicken, the Chinese trick, and of course we do in the West, is chicken feet. So chicken feet have amazing collagen gelatin in it, and they're delicious.
Well, you eat them straight by the train tracks at the train station. Yeah. I always used to get them in Hong Kong.
Absolutely. Feng Jiao is my favorite.
Yes. Marco Canora joins us right now. Ming Tsai is with us in the studio. Bridget Lancaster, a whole lot of tremendous soup, and we're going to be doing some sipping and eating here. But Marco has just made an enormous splash with his Brodo restaurant in New York. Marco Canora, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Hey, guys.
What do you put into your broth that has made it such a mega hit right now in New York City, Marco?
Well, I'm serving three different broths. One is a gingered grass-fed beef broth. The other is a straight-up organic chicken broth. And then we have what we call hearth broth, which is the broth I've been cooking with at Hearth Restaurant for the last 11 years. And that's comprised of whole turkeys, whole stewing fowls, and some beef shin that has a lot of meat on it.
Shin, so, and you want stuff with meat? You want things with collagen? Do you have, I don't know, the necks and chicken feet and all that going on?
Yeah, well, you know, I really think that bones by themselves don't really lend a whole lot of flavor, especially when you're making beef broth. I think a lot of people at home are making beef broth with just marrow bones, and there's not a lot of meat on those bones, and it really doesn't yield a flavorful broth. So I think, you know, the addition of meaty bones or some meat really helps in the way of creating wonderful flavor and umami.
But you do want to break down those bones and bits and marrow, so you've got to have something acid in here, right? Vinegar or wine or a little tomato paste.
In the Italian repertoire, it's usually tomato product that helps do that.
And you're selling this not as a traditional soup in a bowl where you're sitting down. You're selling this in cups, and people are drinking it like they might drink a latte.
Yeah, you know, the mission was really to try to create a new alternative hot beverage. So by putting it in a coffee cup with a sip lid, people are really treating it like coffee and drinking it on the go. And that's really been part of, you know, it's really been alluring to people, and I think why so many people are gravitating towards it, because it's really a quick, fast fix. It's low in calorie. It makes you feel good, as everybody mentioned, and the health benefits, you know, the list is as long as your arm.
Well, speak to those, because the paleo nuts out there are making very big claims here. All that collagen is going to give us beautiful skin and all the rest. What are you asserting here on the health claim front?
Well, it speaks to everyone's vanity for sure, because this whole notion of hair, nails, and skin, there's no question that collagen and gelatin helps those things become vibrant and strong. But besides those things, though, I think it really does help build a healthy gut. There's been so much conversation in the health and wellness world about, you know, about gut health and how that's related to so many inflammatory diseases and even depression. So, you know, it is a powerful elixir. And I think that people are really starting to, you know, do their own research and figure it out on their own. And, you know, this trend is really gaining a lot of traction on a national and maybe even a global level.
Marco Canora, I know you've got Brodo there in New York. I know you are on Next Iron Chef with Ming Tsai. He's got the beautiful soups here in the studio with us right now. Say hi. And what's the difference between Western broth, Eastern broth? I don't know. Ming, Marco, tell us.
How are you doing, Marco? Nice to hear your voice.
It's great to hear your voice too, Ming. I miss those days together.
I know. It's nice being on the same side, huh?
No doubt.
We're on this broth side. You know, I don't know. I think how you flavor the broth of the Brodo determines.
Brodo, the Italian word for broth.
Right. Okay, I'm actually not Italian, Tom.
Oh, really? Okay.
But Marco is.
You could be.
And so I have a broth that has lemongrass and lime leaf and shallots, and so that's an Asian side. But the base, a chicken stock, is primarily the same. We always use mirepoix, carrots, celery, onions. Like Marco was saying, if you use straight bones, you're not going to get as much flavor as you have some meat on the bones. So that's why chicken backs are great, and necks and feet for the gelatin. And and Marco's so right. If you do straight beef bones, it's no flavor at all. You got to, as Bridget will attest, if you roast them, you get more flavor. But if you add meat to them, then you get your meaty flavor, because the goal is not just to drink something healthy. I think Marco hit it out of the park. by drinking something delicious. And by the way, it's really good for you.
And Marco, are you putting a straight up marrow in here as well? I read the price of marrow has gone up like crazy, $6.99 a pound or more at Whole Foods now, just for marrow. Is that going in here?
You know, well, it's interesting because a lot of people think that beef bone broth is made with marrow bones, and I don't think that that's a great idea because, as you know, marrow is really pure fat. So if you boil the heck out of that and then skim off the broth the way you're taught to as a technique, you're essentially
putting it in, taking it out.
Yeah, you're putting it in and taking it out, and it doesn't really add a lot of nutrient value to it. So I prefer to make a stock without marrow bones, and then get some marrow bones and float them in the finished stock so you're sure to drink all of that wonderful nutrient-dense fat that, you know, is really, you know, really good for you. And a lot of people are still on this saturated fat is bad bandwagon. And I really think that saturated fat from high-quality animals is actually something that we desperately need in our diet.
Hey, Marco Canora, you've hit it out at the park at Brodo. Newly opened restaurant serves bone broth out of its storefront window in New York's East Village. Latest book, A Good Food Day. Marco Canora, thank you so much for spending a minute with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, call us with your soup loves. Bone broth, cauliflower, lentil, you name it. Bridget Lancaster, Ming Tsai, please stand by. We're talking soup. 800-423-8255. This is On Point.
Sneak up to the lid, be careful, it's hot. I lift up the corner and I take a little sniff, and then I close my eyes and take a great big whiff. I go and get a tablespoon to steal a little taste. I got a big soup smile all over my face. Smells like winter at our house. Smells like winter at our house. It smells like winter in our house. It smells like bean soup, chicken soup, with macaroni, cream of broccoli, minestrone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about this winter's great craze for broth, bone broth, and in these cold days, the makings of a great winter soup. And we have two tremendous authors of wonderful food with us today. Ming Tsai joins us, chef and owner of Blue Ginger and Blue Dragon, great restaurants. You may know him from the public television show Simply Ming. He's out with 5 cookbooks, Blue Ginger, Simply Ming, Ming's Master Recipes, and all the rest, right here in the studio with soup for us. Bridget Lancaster is here as well, executive food editor for New Media Television and Radio at America's Test Kitchen, Cook's Illustrated Television Show. They've got the Healthy Slow Cooker Revolution and a lot more. And beautiful, beautiful broth and soup on the table. All that broth talk, Bridget. You've got two right here. What's the difference? One's a little lighter, one's a little darker. One's roasted.
Right. Well, would you like to taste them both first, before or after? You'd like to be a surprise?
Well, sure, I'll taste one. Here's one with a little lighter color.
Right.
It's kind of a nice golden.
Yep. Love slurping on the radio. It's a good idea.
Well, yeah, love it. It's got a little kick to it, a little tang to it,
yes,
and a lovely flavor, very light.
Okay,
am I supposed to guess? I'll try the darker one here. All right, here we go. A little deeper, a little more bass in there.
That's right.
It's all about the bass.
And
I
your
heard
voice
on the radio.
Dropped when you said that too. That's great.
That's the way it works. So what? Roasted has got the deeper flavor.
That's right. So that is the difference between these two. These are really basic beef bone broths. And I only had the time to cook them for about 8 hours.
Because we called you about 8 hours
that's
and five
right.
minutes
that's
ago.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. I was putting these in the fridge at 2 o'clock in the morning.
So with one, you just take the bones, you put them in, and you begin to simmer. The other, you're going to roast the bones and meat before you make the broth.
That's exactly right. So the only difference between this, it had the exact same amount of bones. Actually, these had meat as well. So there were short ribs in both of these, which has an amazing amount of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I used oxtail, shank, and some knuckle. So there is some of each in both of these broths. The only difference is that the darker one was roasted for about 30 minutes at 450.
If you're cooking for your table, do you go roasted or not roasted?
You know, it really depends, I think, on the final product. If I want something like a really light soup, I might not roast. I might sweat the ingredients instead. So put them in a covered pot with a little bit of oil, a little bit of water, just so that they kind of stew in their own moisture. It helps to open them up and pull out some of that flavor. But if I want a really hearty broth in the winter, I will definitely roast it.
It's cold. It's winter now, and I like that deep roast, yep. roast side flavor.
It's like coffee, deep roasted.
Yes, deep roasted. Ming, in Asian cuisine, roasted or not roasted before the bones go in the pot?
Tend to not roast. There's not a lot of ovens in Asia.
Yep.
So the roasting would be hard. And mostly it's, look, the Chinese would use everything. So this has gone back thousands of years that yes. these bones we're not throwing away. We're going to make a broth
nothing,
out of that.
Zip, nada. It's all going to be cooked.
And it reminds me that, I don't know about you guys for Thanksgiving, but my favorite dish is the turkey soup 12
right.
hours later.
Yeah.
Right? Get
yeah.
those bones, and those
absolutely.
Are roasted, and there's the flavor that roasting adds is almost like adding grilled foods to your food in the winter. So that's why the deep flavor is so nice, because the bones get to cook. But some people really want a lighter colored broth,
mm-hmm.
and it's the difference between a white stock and a dark stock. So it really depends where you're using it. However, if you're going for the flavor, I love what Bridget just rattled off, the oxtails, the shins. That's a flavorful and nutritious broth.
Now, if you come to this, just let's say as someone who is just familiar with Asian cuisine, and you just pick up this is a sort of a Western beef broth here.
Right.
Is this going to seem sufficiently complex, or is this just too simple? I mean, I'm thinking in most Asian broths, you start to get into the ramen territory, and we'll go there.
Right.
There's a lot more flavor going
this,
on.
This
there.
Is just, but Paul Bocuse said it as well. This is the base. So here's mm-hmm. your base stock mm-hmm. or broth, mm-hmm. and to that, mm-hmm. you add then all your flavors.
Mm-hmm.
So if for the, all my Asian dishes I brought you, we have a miso caramelized onion shallot puree that goes into the broth. So that's what's going to flavor that. For my pho, which is more Vietnamese, that has lemongrass and lime leaf and garlic ginger chilies. So it's the flavors you add to the broth. But if you don't start with a good base broth, you might as well start over. You have to have a good broth.
Let's go to one of those variations that you've brought. Where should we begin? We can hear you.
Okay, we're going to start with the miso one.
Okay.
It's a miso ramen.
Okay. So ramen gets us to Japan, gets us to China, and these days gets us all over the United States. Ramen just, we're not talking anything like noodles in a plastic bag that you make in 10 seconds here.
In your dorm room.
In your dorm room or, I don't know, on a camp trail
right,
or somewhere.
Right.
It's as rich and delicious and complex as you can imagine, and I now have, oh, good heavens, I have a bowl of imperial splendor in front of me. This is a big, wide lacquer bowl with bean sprout, and I think that's a quivering egg in the middle, and a whole lot of lovely greens, and the...
This is a little watercress, that's pork belly, but
pork
really,
belly
really
side.
Mix it up, because obviously, traditionally, you would boil the noodles fresh, of course, but we're in your studio.
Yeah. Oh, now, take us to the broth that's underneath all
try
this.
Try the broth first.
Yeah,
so the broth is a pork bone-based broth. So it's mirepoix, carrots, celery, onions, and this is roasted pork bones.
Oh,
and
man.
Then to that, that's our base wow. broth. Then we caramelize a bunch of onions, and we add shiro miso, which is the tan miso if you've had miso soup.
Of course.
And then that's what that gets added at the end with just a pat of butter to give it a richness. So there's your base broth. The noodles are blanched separately, which are ramen noodles we had made for us at Blue Dragon. This is actually on Blue Dragon's menu right now.
What do you call this?
We call it the house ramen. It's our pork belly ramen.
What's the kick in the broth?
There's a little chili. There's a little togarashi, which
that's
is Japanese
beautiful.
Chili.
And the egg here, I can see the yolk is quivering in it on top.
You know,
of it. You expect that to be broken into the soup? And
exactly.
Cut,
that adds the
right
richness.
Through?
You want it. You do not want a hard-boiled egg. You want that to crack, and you want it to ooze in and mix it in.
Oh, this is absolutely gorgeous. I think we can just shut everything down right now and do this for the rest of the day. But we won't. Nora, come into our kitchen, calling from Boston. Thank you very much for being with us, Nora.
I want to applaud you on the show. I mean, I have two small children at home, and we're always saving bones and making, I guess I'm a home cook, so what I call stock, I don't know it's a real official name, but I'm always throwing it into polentas and risottos, but I'm always in the search. I mean, it saves our budget so much. Saves our budget so much by, you know, buying the better quality meats and then making into stock. But my question is, you know, what other creative ways could I have to be making other healthy meals for my family that, you know, helps, you know, I guess what would be throw away, you know, something that would be thrown away, like the bones.
Nora, they sound very healthy back there. They sound full of vim and vigor.
Yeah, they are healthy.
So you're saying beyond kind of the basic leftover chicken carcass, what else might go into the stock?
No, I guess like whatever.
Or maybe make a meal.
What are meals besides? I'm always making polenta or I guess my risotto because I get a lot of Italian food. But
yeah.
You know, what other other options are there? You know, I've got this freezer full of chicken stock that has been, you know, put down in ice cubes because, you know.
Right. Okay. Well, let us take it. There's a lot of ways we could go, but let's take it to the liquid form here. I mean, soup-wise, where can she go with all that?
I mean, we make noodle soups all the time, not only at home, but all over Asia. So if you have a great base stock, mm-hmm. I would just take whatever meat you may have. It could be chicken breast, it could be ground chicken or ground pork. Saute that with aromatics, with just onions or garlic, whatever you might have. Throw in whatever leafy vegetable at the end that you may have. So in other words, saute your meat, get in your aromatics, put that broth in, and then heat the broth up till it's just simmering. Throw in a huge or two huge handfuls of spinach or kale or mixed greens or water, whatever you have, and then add blanched noodles. It could be any noodle. It could be ditalini. It could be spaghetti. It could be rice noodles. Throw those blanched noodles into your broth. You have a meal. You have your veg. You have your carb. You have your broth. You're good to go.
Nora, you're off to the races with your energetic children as well. They'll love it. Mary in West Hartford, Connecticut. Mary, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I'm listening to your radio show has made me, I'm going to head straight to Pho, my favorite Pho restaurant right after this.
Hello, Vietnam.
Yeah, I love it. We've discovered it in the last few years, and it seems to be at all the major cities you can find a great Pho restaurant if you look, you know, online.
Absolutely. What do you love about it? And, of course, here you've got all kinds of ingredients coming in. What's got you hooked on Pho, Mary?
I think it's just the noodles and the hearty broth. I mean, it just tastes so comforting on a day, especially like today. It's snowing here in Connecticut. I'm from Minnesota originally. I wish I would have known about it in Minnesota when I lived there.
Yep.
But it's really the best. I just have no clue how to make it. But just wondering, you know, is it worth the time if you found a great restaurant
To do it at home? Well, we have no less than the great Ming Tsai here, who has just brought me another steaming bowl, this one a Pho, and it is absolutely gorgeous. I will come to your question while we get there. Ming, describe this. We've got at least a couple of kinds of meat here across the top of this beautiful. These are white noodles.
So these are rice noodles. Okay. So for all the celiacs and gluten-free, rice is awesome. Mm. So here's a very aromatic duck bone broth.
Oh.
So we take
duck breast across the top here.
That is. That's actually frozen duck breast that's sliced raw.
Very thin.
And like a traditional pho, you actually cook the meat, which is usually beef or beef tendon, in the broth. So we just pour it on top. There's also duck confit, which is the shredded meat as well.
Okay.
So we use, the whole carcass. We confit the legs. We use the breast on top. But the broth is the key. The broth, again, we do roast the duck bones, a nice dark duck broth. To that, we add shallots
rich.
And lemongrass and lime leaf and Thai chilies.
And, of course, the basil leaves on top and a little chili on top.
Exactly. Basil leaves. You have a little hoisin as well and sriracha.
Hoisin is what gives the real depth to this broth?
Hoisin gives it a little sweetness, actually, because you have some spice in there.
Well, the duck, talk about depth. That's plenty right there. That is amazing.
And you know, I say to everyone that may not have had noodle soups or something like that, this is what we eat all over Asia. This is the Asian street food. In every Asian country, you have a noodle broth. In the summer, too, not just winter.
I mean, Indonesia, soto ayam, absolutely love that. This is incredible. And Mary's question out of West Hartford is, if she's got a great go-to Pho restaurant where she gets something very satisfying, is it worth doing this at home?
Absolutely. First of all, you can do it dirt cheap. By the way, for the record, please still come to our restaurants.
Yes.
However, when you cook at home,
you
could totally save money at home because you literally would buy two whole ducks or two whole chickens if you want.
Yep.
You break them down. You have your bones to make your broth, and then you have your protein to finish it. And I always say this to people that cook at home. If you think it tastes good, guess what? It tastes good. So just season and taste as you go. People have their own palate, but if you think it tastes good, it's salt and pepper that's going to make or break a dish. So just taste as you go, and anyone can actually make this. By the way, if you use Christopher Kimball's cookbooks or my cookbooks or all these wonderful cookbooks out there,
great recipe,
they can help.
Halfway down the road. Such great, great, just deliciousness here. It's just the complexity in here and the kick of it. There's nothing bland whatsoever.
I think that's part of the huge appeal of soups, too, is that you can really personalize them.
That's so true.
It's whatever you want to go into that pot, as long as you follow a few rules, like the spinach at the last minute and things like that. But You know, it's such an individual thing, Stu.
Bridget, you've got a wonderful chicken noodle.
I do. I've got to bring it out to you in just a moment. Yeah, it's heating up.
Oh, okay. We'll let that cook. Describe it while you do. This is pressure cooker chicken noodle soup.
That's right.
Everybody's talking about pressure cookers on soup these days. Why?
Well, so pressure cookers, obviously, they speed up cooking.
Yep.
And one of the problems that a lot of home cooks have is that chicken noodle soup, they say, well, it takes too long to make the homemade broth. So instead, I'm going to go and buy a carton of the stuff at the supermarket.
So how long if you weren't pressure cooking?
Less than 30 minutes.
No, if you weren't.
Oh, if you weren't. Oh, from beginning to end, it's going to take you a good 2 hours to get that soup together.
Right.
Or more if you're not sure, you know, of what you're doing. But it's going to take time for the meat and the bone to give off their flavors into a stock. However, with pressure cooker, it really does force the flavors out quickly. So you get start to finish the soup in about a half an hour. The last thing that you do is you add the noodles right at the last 5 minutes, and you've got homemade chicken noodle soup.
While that chicken noodle soup comes to the table, let's get Anita calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Anita, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, let us not forget fish head broth.
Fish head broth. Okay, we will not forget it now. Describe the soup you make with it.
Well, it's a lot of, you know, it has a lot of that sticky stuff that you want in it. You just put it, some onions, salt, pepper, water, butter, and you don't have to cook it for 8 hours like you do the beef broth. You could cook it for about an hour and a half.
Yep.
How do you like to season it, Anita? We've got our fish heads. We're picturing the broth. They're staring up at us from the pot.
Well, you're going to take the head. You're going to take all the bones out and just kind of put a little bit of the meat back in the broth and finish if you have people that don't like heads.
Yeah.
And a habanero pepper, but do not break the pepper. That's the flavor and the secret to a fish head broth.
Interesting.
At the end of the process, you sit it on the top while the pot just turned from a full boil. Cover the pot. Take the pepper out before serving. Do not break the pepper in the pot.
Okay, that sounds like an absolute maxim. I survived is the wrong word, really, but lived on fish heads and fish head broth for several days once sailing from Balikpapan to Surabaya. Very flavorful. You're nodding right away when Anita brings the fish heads to the table.
I have memories of my mom and grandma fighting over the fish head.
Yeah.
And because we cook whole fish, and people don't realize there's almost as much gelatin in fish as there is any beef shed.
Right. I think there is.
And it's perhaps, I'm not going to make a bad statement here, but perhaps even healthier because of the omega 3. So the cheeks and all the collagen around the head, that is so delicious. And my mom and grandma would fight over the eyeballs. They would just go in for the eyeballs.
Eyeballs. We've got to bring it to this chicken noodle soup because it's hot right now.
Yes.
What do we got here, Bridget?
So this is that pressure cooker chicken noodle soup.
And the smell is just great.
So the chicken should be nice and tender, full of flavor. And the fact that we only add the noodles at the last 5 minutes... Hopefully it makes them, you know, not absorb.
And just 30 minutes to this much tenderness in your chicken noodle soup?
Exactly.
It's delicious.
That is fantastic. And so a lot of bone in there as well when you're getting this going in the pressure cooker?
Yeah, so this used a whole chicken. But the only difference was that the chicken breast was not cooked as long, so we were able to shred it and put it back in to finish. So you don't want to cook a whole chicken all at the same time for, you know, the breast and the thighs for the same amount of time.
A little onion, a little carrot,
a little celery, a little parsley to finish.
Parsley on top, and absolutely, we bring it home to the traditional chicken noodle, and it's totally delicious.
Good.
What is it about soup in the winter that is just so deeply, deeply satisfying? We're cooking, we're tasting, we're trying, we're open to your recipes, we're licking our fingers because they kind of got po and chicken noodle soup and ramen on them here. Bridget Lancaster is with us from America's Test Kitchen. Ming Tsai from Blue Ginger and Blue Dragon is here. We want to hear your soup recipe, your soup stories. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. It's soup time at On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back.
Ain't nobody cooking but me and you. The stew that you're cooking, it smells so good. It's got everybody talking in the neighborhood. Your spice is spicy. Your sugar is so sweet. Your meat is so tender. And your juice is a treat. Too many cooks are gonna spoil the stew. Too many cooks are gonna spoil the stew. Too many cooks are gonna spoil the stew. There ain't nobody cooking but me and you.
We hope you are enjoying this podcast. As special thank you, Audible.com would like to offer you a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Audible has over 150,000 titles, fiction, nonfiction, bestsellers, every category imaginable. They also have tons of exclusive content you can't get anywhere else. Just go to audible.com/onpoint, choose a free book and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. Get started today.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking soup, broth, bone broth. It's hot now and great winter nourishment in a bowl. Studio's been turned into a soup kitchen, and I mean in the most wonderfully tasty way today. Ming Tsai is with us from Blue Ginger and Blue Dragon, author of Simply Ming. You may know us from his PBS show, Ming's Master Recipes, and many more. Bridget Lancaster is with us from America's Test Kitchen, and we are all about soup today. The big table in the studio is covered with soup glory. Be jealous, be very jealous of the table in front of me right now. Joe in Atlanta, thank you for calling on Soup Day, Joe. What do you know?
Well, I'm very impressed with your panel, and I wanted to ask one question and give you one recipe. The one question is, I think I learned from my mother, though she didn't realize she was teaching her kids, that without love in your heart, you really cannot cook. Would the panel care to comment on that?
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, please. Bridget, love in your heart, you can't, without it, you can't do it.
Well, if you think about what cooking is, the other part of that is you're feeding, and we mm-hmm. feed those to nourish them and mm-hmm. to fill their bellies. And I think that is an act of love. I think food does taste better if you have your heart into it. If you're lucky enough to love to cook, you'll cook more. So.
Some of my favorite cooks, Ming, I see just a little bit of a love trance in their eye when they're cooking. There's that intangible final thing in the feel of it going into the pot. It is not just mechanical at all.
Not at all. You really are giving a part of yourself. The reason I am a chef is I can actually make people happy through food. I can nourish them and do all the wonderful things for the body, but you can actually make people happy because you are giving a part of yourself every time you're cooking. And that's the same as a restaurant or at home. And for sure, 99% of my best childhood memories are around food. It's around the dinner table, and it starts with the nose. So the smell of that broth, the red roast duck or whatever, the chicken soup, the your nose, your olfactory system, the nose is what remembers everything first.
Why is soup in particular, to me anyway, so tightly tied to this sense of warmth, love, affection? I hope it's not just the Campbell soup ads from many years ago. There seems to be something, to something real there, weren't they?
I think it's something that even in dire straits and poor times and mm-hmm. war, World mm-hmm. War I, World War II, mm-hmm. there was still always bones and always broths. And, and I think part of it is it just takes time. It's mm-hmm. a very slow process to cook, and you
fills
can't just
the house
sear
with
it. And it
fills aroma.
Exactly. It fills the house, and it starts building your appetite. So it's something that really is like a clock. You get it going at noon and you know it's going to be ready at 6, but you can really make a good broth almost out of nothing. So I think that's part of it.
We've got funny comments online on Twitter here. A blank range says, Tom Ashbrook's talking broth right now at On Point Radio, making me crazy. Cliff says, I thought I loved soup until I realized I was eating liquid bones. Get over it, Cliff. It's great. Judy says, go broth. I've added bone broth made with bones from my local farm, pastured and grass-fed, of course, to my morning routine. It's been wonderfully healing, emotionally soothing. Boy, this is great. My skin glows, my hair is glowing, growing in thicker than ever, and it does heal the gut. She says, I cook mine in a pressure cooker 2 hours with an onion chopped in quarters, a carrot, celery, fish sauce for that depth, mm-hmm. I guess, apple cider vinegar to help break things down, slivers of ginger, salt and pepper. She's off to the races. There's Judy's broth. Barb in Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Mukwonago. Barb, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, John, Tom.
Hi.
Say, I happen to have some oxtails that I pulled out of my freezer 2 days ago, and they're thawed and ready to go. Can you guide me to a good recipe or tell me over the air because there's thousands on the internet and I can't decide.
Bridget, you want to dive in? Oxtails all thawed, ready to go.
I would toss those oxtails definitely with a little bit of oil, or you can actually rub tomato paste all over the outside of them, and then put them in a really hot oven, about 400 degrees, and roast them until they get really nice and deeply
dark.
What's
that going to be like? 40 minutes, an hour?
Yeah, maybe 35, 40 minutes. But go more by your eye than by the time. Put them in a pot along with some aromatics, some roughly chopped onion, carrot, maybe a little celery if you like celery, and then just cover it with water. You don't want to add too much. Let that slowly simmer for at least 6-8 hours. You're going to get some really, really good flavor out of that.
The broth, the oxtail broth right there. Ming, where would you take it?
You know, I agree with what Bridget would do. There's one quick kind of, not cheating, but you can make it even better, is use store-bought chicken broth. No sodium or low sodium instead of water. So now you're starting with a good base instead of water. And please put as much vegetable. The aromatics are key. The carrots, the celery, the onions, the garlic, the ginger. Throw that in. You know, ginger is so medicinal. We haven't even touched upon the fact that you are what you eat, and this could really prevent all diseases, which is what the world is finally realizing. And for I would serve it with the whole oxtail, with the meat, because the meat still will have some flavor and is still good for you. And that's it will be analogous to the broth. But Bridget's so right. Go nice and low and slow. It should never be boiling when you're making a broth because that makes it cloudy.
Barb, low and slow, and a lot of tasty ways to go with your oxtails there. The whole country's picturing them now on your kitchen countertop. Martin in Arlington, Massachusetts. Martin, you're on the air.
Oh, Tom. Hello, how are you, Tom?
Very well.
So, listen, I make soup all the time. And now, I mean, so I'm always making vegetable stock for my cuttings, and I'm always making chicken stock to keep in the freezer. So I have a quick question. The other day, I was making some cocoa mass, so I had to cut up the chicken. So I had backs and parts.
Yeah.
So, you know, I threw it in the pot. Great. Had a lot of vegetables, but mixed stock. There wasn't enough meat and bone to really make it feel umami. So I have this great kind of vegetable stock with some chicken flavor. I threw it in the deck, skimmed all the fat off. So now I have like 3 quarts of this stuff, which is not is good for chicken, for vegetable stock, but it's not good enough for chicken soup. So my question is, I was planning on getting some more chicken and just throw it in the pot and cook for a couple hours. Is that okay? Will that make it better? And if not, why not? And I have some other questions about types of onions to use and why, if you want to.
Well, let's go to that one first, because I think a lot of people may have this experience making soup at home where it just doesn't have enough depth of flavor to it. Somehow it's watery or just not got that density of flavor. Just more chicken, more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Chinese cuisine, we actually have a double stock. We actually make a chicken stock once, and then we make a chicken stock using that chicken stock. Mm-hmm. So like I just mentioned, go ahead and buy. It's okay to buy. There's beautiful organic chicken stocks that are UHT on the store shelves. Use that as your water. Mm-hmm. If you use that as your base, assuming you're not a vegetarian, there's also great vegetarian ones, by the way. Use that as your base, then do everything you just did, my friend, and you'll have an amazing chicken stock. So with your current one, absolutely make a chicken stock with your weaker stock, and you'll be fine.
Martin, what's your onion friend question, my friend?
So this is the deal. So when I make a lot of veggie and chicken stock, I'm kind of like one of these guys that says, well, I like onions and I like carrots. If 4 onions is good, 6 is better. So tell me why I shouldn't put too many veg in my chicken stock. And I always throw the skins in as well. And I'm curious why I should or shouldn't do that. And also I'm curious what kind of onions I should or should not use. What will I get the best results from?
Bridget, pick it up. Martin, maybe so you'll have onions ready for the next meal. I mean, if you put a bushel in there, you'll be all out. But Bridget, how about it?
You know, that's what we were talking about earlier, is that soup is such a personal taste. If you like more onion flavor, then by all means, put in more onion. However, the more that you cut an onion up, exposing its cell walls to the water, the faster that flavor will be extracted. Mm-hmm. So, but I like to use onions and things like leeks because they give a little buttery flavor.
Type of onion? Does it matter to you? What type?
I wouldn't use all sweet onions unless you like a really, really sweet soup.
Yep.
I think yellow onion is great, but onions and leeks and shallots and then garlic is great.
Martin, happy slurping there. Kit in New York, Corning, New York. Thanks for calling, Kit. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling not actually for, for myself. I don't eat meat. I don't eat beef or pork or chicken.
Yeah, you and many others,
I do eat a little bit of fish. But one of the some people don't think of it as soup, but one variety which has not been spoken about yet on your program is from India, dal. My daughter-in-law is from West Bengal.
Yeah.
She has a business, and she actually cooks professionally in Vermont. And every week she makes what are called tiffins for people.
Sure.
Which is a combination of, it sounds if you've traveled a lot, you probably know what a tiffin is. At any rate, there is always dal. And it can be anything from a very, very thin, strained soup to something very, very thick. And depending on the herbs and spices she puts into it, different flavors,
yeah.
Always garlic and onions, always cumin. And then, of course, she doesn't buy curry powder. She makes her own.
Yeah.
But then any kind of vegetables. And every time she makes it, it's different. And it's just very, very hearty and rich. As I say, it can be everything that you would is almost as thick as a pudding to something that is thin as a broth.
Kit, you're making me homesick for great old times in India, and I'd like to be right back there. We do not have a dal soup, but we've got a lentil soup here on the table.
Very close.
Very close. Bridget, you've brought this one in. Red lentils, maybe.
That's right. This is our red lentil soup that was cooked in a slow cooker. And, you know, traditionally with slow cookers, we like to avoid things like lentils because they tend to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, that actually works to our advantage. It gives it a little bit more body, a little bit more creamy texture. And it has some chickpeas in there as well.
I mean, the dal, the lentil, wonderful for body, as you said.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then it's just finished with a little, there's a orange.
Is it lemon or orange?
Orange. So okay. There's a little bit of orange zest in the soup that's cooked slowly. Ooh, and then we finish it with a little bit more juice and some mint.
The mint, we got all these nice things dancing on top
that's
of those
right.
Wonderful deep flavors. And how about the preparation of the lentils here? Do you soak them before you...
You don't need to.
Just throw them in and go.
Yeah, just rinse them off. You know, it depends on where you buy your lentils. But if the bag that you've just bought has a lot of dust on it, you might not want to buy that. But so go somewhere that they have a good turnover of lentils and beans.
Ming, you're tasting there. What are you tasting?
Oh, I think it's delicious.
It's wonderful.
And Bridges obviously understands, and I love that she uses the lentils to actually help thicken because it's obviously starchy. And just by rinsing them and not soaking them, those starch then thicken the soup, which really makes it a hearty soup.
Behind these green beans and carrots and tomatoes and just beautiful, you want to be a vegetarian. This is the way to go right
That's
here.
That's right. It is completely
and
vegetarian.
If I can comment to the last caller, I mean, there's a lot of vegetarians out there. Obviously, the topic, all the wonderful, you know, glycine and you're not getting the collagen out of vegetables. However, you can make the most delicious food. Thomas Keller, who's probably our best chef in this country, if not the world, says it's anyone can cook meat. How can you do with vegetables? It's much harder.
We've got more vegetable to look at here. This beautiful cauliflower soup, it really stands up in the bowl. Tell us about this one, Bridget.
So that is, this is another vegetarian option. Mm-hmm. This is cauliflower soup that uses no chicken stock, no vegetable stock at all. What we did was we cooked cauliflower in three different ways. So we found out that the more you cook cauliflower, it's different flavor compounds are developed and given off. So we started off with...
That's why they call it Test Kitchen Baby.
That's exactly right.
They call it Test Kitchen Baby?
Yeah, I'm the Test Kitchen
Baby. I didn't
know that. So we have three different ways in that. We have the long-cooked cauliflower, and then 20-minute cooked cauliflower. We puree that together. And this has
leeks in it. Distinctly different flavors.
Very distinct.
Long and 20. Wow.
And then it's finished with sautéed cauliflower with a little bit of brown butter and some chives on top.
On top is just sautéed, and there's no cheese. There's no other thickener in here.
No.
It's just cauliflower on cauliflower.
That's
on
right.
Cauliflower.
There's leeks that are slowly simmered as well, but we really wanted that cauliflower taste.
Would you... You know, this would, if it were a prelude to a meal, this could be a whole meal. But if it were a prelude, would you, how do you do your pairings here? What would you put your lentil soup in front of? What would you put your cauliflower soup in front of as a main course, if there were a main course beyond this?
Well, something like the lentil soup, which has a lot of different flavors going for it, I would probably pair it with something very simple afterwards, something like a pork roast or something afterwards. But for the cauliflower soup where it's very elegant, it's almost like a vichyssoise. So you're kind of opening
chill
up.
It, and it could be, really.
It could be, yes. You're opening that up. So your next course could be really, it could have a lot of flavors coming in.
These little sautéed florets on top are absolutely,
I thought it was
onion or something for a minute there.
Well, we like to call that the cauliflower crouton.
Oh, the cauliflower crouton. Right there. What do you say, cauliflower? What would you do with it?
Well, it's amazing how those croutons almost taste meaty,
mm-hmm.
right?
They do,
and
right.
That,
almost
and that,
bacony.
And that's really a great technique Bridget is displaying here, is that how you cook something changes. Mm-hmm. And she totally caramelized with that brown butter. And it's also amazing that it's only cauliflower in here. But
it is.
This could be a base. This could be a fantastic sauce for just seared scallop or seared salmon because it has a nice thickness,
yes.
a nice richness.
Yes.
So this could actually be a fantastic, incredibly healthy sauce that's mm-hmm. that's good for you.
Do you have any creamed Asian soups, or that's just outside the palate?
No, we don't
I
really
can't
have.
Think of any.
The closest thing is the sweet condensed milk that we'll put on right. top of shaved ice.
Yeah.
Good. There weren't cows in China 200 years
well,
ago.
Well, I mean,
so
creamed,
never...
I should say, but this is like yeah. creamed broccoli. I guess yeah. if you think of a congee, you're getting very thick porridge.
Yeah, you have
like
the texture. Right, yeah. So congee, so the shi fan in Mandarin, which is the rice porridge, that has a creamy, I call it a creamy risotto,
mm-hmm.
But there's no dairy in there. There's mm-hmm. very little dairy in Asian cuisine. It's only because of the Western influence over the last 100 years, there is now dairy.
Do you up your soup offerings in the winter, Ming, at Blue Dragon, Blue Ginger?
We offer what I consider a big soup, which is a braise.
Mm-hmm.
So like the oxtail collar, if you actually don't cook it for 8 hours, but just do it till the meat's just falling off the bone, then you serve that. And that's what a short rib is. That's what mm-hmm. a beef, a lamb mm-hmm. shank, pork shank. So those really are soups. Those are glorified soups. You're taking the lesser cut of meat, so something that's a little bit less expensive, but you braise it for the 2 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to cook it the 8 hours because then there's no more flavor in the meat. But then that is, so to answer your question, yes, we do many more braises. We always have our two soups, but we have probably two or three different braises, including the ramen.
Bridget, look at the range of soups just on this tabletop today. Talk about it. It is a diverse and wonderful
Absolutely.
World.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the appeal of soup. There, you can go to any different culture. You can find soup. And the fact that here in the States, we have all these different cultures coming here and then bringing their beautiful foods and ingredients so that we can incorporate them.
All the ways we're lucky, right on
yes.
this tabletop. And because of you, too. Great thanks to both of you. Bridget Lancaster with America's Test Kitchen. Look for their latest cookbook, The Healthy Slow Cooker Revolution. Bridget, thank you so much for this beautiful cooking and beautiful soup and for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. You're going to have to roll me out of here. I'm so full.
Me too. Ming Tsai of Blue Ginger and Blue Dragon of Simply Ming and Blue Ginger East meets West Cooking with Ming Tsai and all the rest. Wonderful to have you right here. Thank you so much for your artistry today.
Thank you, Tom. My pleasure.
Soup Splendor. What a pleasure. Good luck with your soups at home. Thanks for everything. Recipes at our website, onpointradio.org. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.